Hello, everybody. Before we get into this episode, I just wanted to give a quick sort of content warning for some of the things that we talk about today. It's a Mike Takes the Wheel episode, so we never know what we're getting into when we start recording. But there are discussions of suicide and self-harm and also kidnapping, all completely unrelated to one another. All of that conversation starts at around 14 minutes or so. There'll also be mention of it at the time, so you won't be, you know, surprised by it. But I just wanted to let you know that some of those things do come up. So if you are particularly sensitive to those kinds of issues, you know, feel free to listen to the beginning of the episode. You know, we have a good time joking about how crappy of a weekend I had trying to fix up some things around my new house that I bought in October. And it went really poorly. So if you want to hear about that and then tune out after that, like I said, at around 14 and a half minutes or so, you know, feel free. We, you know, we understand that these things can be difficult to listen to sometimes. But it was a really good conversation about a particular politician here in Pennsylvania, where I currently live. So, yeah, just wanted to get that out of the way early and enjoy the episode. Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 130 of I Wish You Were Dead, a podcast about things that used to be alive. My name is Gavin, that is Mike and Fia, and as you might be able to tell, because I'm the one talking here at the beginning, this is no longer my podcast for the day. It is the onus has shifted over to Mike to do work.
Was it ever really your podcast?
No, it is our podcast. You're absolutely right.
I was kind of hoping you were going to say, no, yeah, it's definitely, you know, definitely my podcast.
It's the Gavin Show.
I no longer have the reins for today. But yeah, dude, so.
Can we imagine, the way you just said that, can we imagine what show it would be if it was the Gavin Show? Like, the way you just said that, because, like,
that's a different kind of show. I don't even know if I'd watch that show, man.
I was like, that's a different kind, like, that's like a premium, like, you know, HBO After Dark kind of show.
My life is way more boring than that, man.
I was thinking more of like a Nick at Night kind of thing.
Well, funnily enough that we're talking about this, I am going to have a little story time at the beginning. So it's going to start off by being a little bit of the Gavin Show. But yeah, that's going to be my contribution. Just a little story time about my weekend. But yeah, with it being an episode that ends in zero, it is a Mike Takes the Wheel episode. So as per usual, Fia and I have no idea what this episode is about, and I'd wager Mike didn't this morning. But
absolutely not. Wait, this morning? This morning? How dare you assume that this morning is when I figured out we were going to talk about? I figured out we were talking about at 6:30 today.
I love it.
It's currently 8:30. We were ready to record at 8, but somebody had to half brush their teeth before we got started here.
That was
I got yelled at by an Australian man.
Okay, guys.
To figure things out.
I forgot about the podcast.
I think I had this figured out.
But it's okay. I'm here.
It happens.
I stopped brushing my teeth for you, for the fans.
That's the dedication we have for you, the listener.
I was going to say, Fee, I appreciated the fact that you put fans plural
yes.
When you said that. That was
we
well
have
done.
Multiple yes. fans.
We do. We have a couple hundred people that follow us on Spotify, which is pretty cool.
Wow.
I was talking with somebody the other day who said that they listened to us, and I was like, wow, all right.
Yeah.
Like, it feels good.
That's cool.
So, a person out there, you know who you are. Hey, shout out to you.
Yeah. But yeah, so before we get into whatever this topic's going to be, Fia, do you have some housekeeping for us?
I sure do. Don't forget to rate the show on whatever platform you listen to us on and to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube. To give us feedback about the show and any future topics you would like to hear on the podcast. And if you would like to be a guest on the show, be sure to fill out the guest forms, and all of that can be found in the show notes. Or you can randomly shout us out in the middle of the hallway, like Mike's fan did, and then
yeah.
you can interact with us there. So.
Oh, sure, speaking of which, did you guys get, we got like a Facebook message. Did you guys get that?
What?
Oh yeah, I did. I didn't respond to that person yet. I will.
Yeah. Whoever sent us the Facebook message, we got it. When I say we, I'm hoping Gavin got it because, you know, this is the Gavin Show, as previously discussed.
The Gavin
so
Show.
He'll handle whatever. Yeah. Whatever, yeah. Man, we may have to have an official rebrand.
I know. Or just literally do anything with social media because I don't.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's for future Gavin to figure out.
Yes.
But yeah, also on future Gavin is next episode, we're going to be talking about the Eocene epic in episode 126, which was sort of mid-December-ish. We talked about the Paleocene epic, which was right after the dinosaurs went extinct, and sort of as the dust from the giant meteor was settling. So next we're going to be talking about after that and how life, you know, started to actually bounce back after the big disaster. So that's going to be next episode. Yeah, I'm excited about that. Sophia,
I got nothing told for Mike you guys. And I already. I'm sorry, I'm really dropping the ball.
That's all right, pal. Because I have story time, and it's... boy, I had a weekend, guys. So, I'm going to say some words that my fellow junior millennials and elder Zoomers will never hear, and that I own a house. Very few of...
And we're proud of you.
Thank yes. you. Very few of people in my same age bracket can say the same. And sometimes there's a little part of me that wishes that I could also say that. Because I had a rough weekend doing some housework. So...
What broke?
When we bought the house in October, we... there was some, like, just atrocious wallpaper in the kitchen. It was like this cream-colored background with like ivy and like red berries on it. And it was like very old and the entire kitchen. So literally the day we got the keys, as soon as we legally owned the house, or at least started paying the bank money to own the house for us, Liz ripped all of it off. That was like day one. And so that was in October. And so for the past, like, I don't know, 4 months, whatever, that we've owned the house, we've just been living with this wallpaperless abyss of a wall.
Okay.
So we decided we had a little energy this past weekend. We were like, you know what, we're going to go and re-wallpaper the house. Most of our walls aren't good for, like, painting, because they're all plaster and lath, not drywall. So it's what they did before drywall was, like, a thing. So there were like, we knew that there were multiple layers of wallpaper still there that we just were like, you know, what's one more going to hurt? Joke's on us.
Yeah.
We went and bought some wallpaper and some of the materials to put up wallpaper.
It's so hard.
It's so bad.
Really?
If you ever have a chance to wallpaper a wall, do not do literally anything else. And the it would have mostly been fine because we bought like pretty thick wallpaper to sort of cover up any bumps or whatever behind the wall.
Thick with like 3 C's.
Yeah, pretty close. And so we were like, yeah, that'll be fine. There's like some bits and stuff, you know, behind the other layers of wallpaper. But I'm like, if it's a little bit, you know, out of whack, it's fine. We also got some like board for like the bottom like 3 feet or so of the wall, and then the top part was gonna be wallpaper. And we went to put up the wallpaper. First sheet goes relatively fine. Second sheet, horrible.
Because you had to line them up.
No, that part went fine. It wasn't patterned wallpaper, which made it way easier. It was like textured, so it doesn't really matter. There was no like pattern to line up between one sheet and the other.
Okay.
But as we moved on to the third sheet, we took a little break after the second one because it was a whole ordeal. We were like, I need an emotional break. So the first two were like kind of dryish by the time we put up the third one. And the second one especially was very like puffy and not from like an air bubble or from like a glue bubble or whatever. It was because the wallpaper behind it had like been pulled off the wall. From like the water from the glue. So it was a gap between like the wallpaper, not the new wallpaper, the old wallpaper and the wall.
Wow.
And I'm like, there's no way you can fix that. That's just not going away. So we put up the third one, and then we had a come to Darwin moment.
Oh.
Gee, I've never. Oh
my God. I made that up off the fly. That was a new one for me too.
That's a new one.
Thank you. And we were like, you know, we have two unopened rolls of wallpaper. Do we just return those, rip these off, and then just rip all the wallpaper off the wall and see what happens? And that's what we did. So, needless to say, it went, after even that, went way worse than we thought it was going to.
How?
Mm-hmm.
Because the top half of the wall is like this really ugly red plaster. I don't know if that's just the color it came in back then, or if it was like standard to paint it. There's no way someone would like purposefully paint an interior wall this color.
Hmm.
So I have no idea why. Because it was like, not even like an artistically kind of dark red or maroon. No, it was like clearly a much brighter red at the time that has since faded. And that was the top half of the wall. The bottom half was like, it was a single piece of material, of sort of vaguely tile-like material. A single piece, but it had been like routed to make tile shapes, little diamonds and like triangles and stuff. And then grout was put between all those pieces to make it look like it was many, many pieces of tile put up, like a backsplash behind a kitchen or something, or a counter.
Mm-hmm.
But no, it was like some single piece of material that is a mystery to me. And so...
Gavin, I'm starting to think you bought a really crappy house.
You said it.
Oh.
I don't regret buying the house, but stuff like this is like, man, how do we fix that?
Yeah.
And so if you have any suggestions, please let me know. Because so far, our current answer is to just take that board that we bought for like what we were going to put as the bottom half of the wall to just make that the entire wall. So that was my weekend.
Yeah. Doesn't sound fun.
God.
Yeah. If I remember, and this is going to be a weird first social media post in a while, I'll post some of the pictures. It's rough, man.
I need to see it. I want to see it really badly.
I'll definitely send you guys some pictures.
How many layers of paper was there?
So there was at least three layers of wallpaper, which isn't like...
That's not crazy.
Crazy. But there was also a layer of like newspaper between the first layer and the wall.
Really?
Yeah. We even tried... We looked for a date on it. The I don't know if it was the previous owners or the first owners, but they loved putting newspaper in places. Like, they put newspaper around a lot of the door frames instead of, like, insulation.
Okay.
Yep. Like, in a lot of the closets, the, like, inside door frame of the closet has newspaper just, like, nailed to it.
That's just dumb.
Yeah. Anyway.
I love it.
So, yeah. Despite what you might hear, fellow, again, younger millennials, elder zoomers like myself, buying a house may or may not be all it's cracked up to be.
Yeah.
And with that.
On top of that, and I talked with Mike about this while we were waiting for Fia to finish brushing her teeth, that I also had a whole ordeal a couple weeks ago with a generator. That was a story for another time.
Long story short, before the power really does go out.
Yeah. Long story short, power went out. We went to buy a generator because the power company said it was going to be like 3 days before the power came back. Spent like $1,200 buying a generator and all the stuff that goes with it, only for the power to be back on when we got home. Yeah. Anyway, I'll share that full story, maybe on Fia's next episode. But anyway.
It'll be a Patreon exclusive.
Maybe. I like that joke. To be clear, listeners, we do not have a Patreon.
yet.
Anyway, on to the actual topic of this episode. Mike, what are we doing today?
Yes.
All right. So, content warning. So, for those who don't know, Mike takes the wheel. So, I'm a social studies teacher. I do history stuff. And I try and find some people in history that like no one knows about, but like have some kind of cool story. Maybe they were like an awesome hero. Maybe they were like this terrible villain. Maybe they're just weird. Today, so content warning today, we got some self-harm going on. We got some rough stuff happening today. I don't want to spoil it. So just, we're going to go down that road. If that's not for you, you're more than welcome to be excused from this episode. There will be no further like hidden jokes from this point forward that carry on. I was trying to find something in like the something about the realm of like crime or disappearances or like weird deaths is what I wanted to talk about. There was two things that immediately came to mind. There was this woman named Lori Erica Ruff, who married somebody, divorced them. She then committed or died by suicide. And after she did that, it was found out that her name wasn't Lori Erica Ruff, that she was living under a false identity this whole time. Mm. That was in 2010. And like the internet was just like trying to find out who this woman was and what her backstory was until I believe 2016, until it was discovered that she was born Kimberly Maria McLean. She disappeared at age 20, it looks like, maybe 18. And it's basically started a new life. She never wanted to talk about her history, never wanted to talk about her past. And, reason being is that she just lived under an assumed identity.
Wow.
And, always wonder, I feel like doing that kind of thing would be way easier in like the early 1900s or something, but to do that in like 2010, that takes some doing. Like you gotta kind of know what you're doing for that.
Right. You've got to find someone that died. You've got to, that's, around your age, the social security numbers and history and just, the internet, like all that versus, if you were, if you're around in like, 1892 or something, you just hop a train and go out west and all of a sudden, like, you're whoever you want to be.
Yeah.
So not to say that there weren't ways of tracking people down back then, there were, but just the network of trying to find people was more difficult. I decided I didn't want to talk about her just because it's mostly just kind of what I said. There was a woman lived under a false identity, died by suicide. It was discovered that this is in the process of her getting a divorce. Yada yada yada. Eventually, there is some DNA work that was done that figured out who she was. I found that to be less interesting. The second one that I thought about talking about was connected to this Polaroid that was found in June 1989. Basically, this like windowless white van drove away, and a Polaroid flew out of it from like a gas station, and someone picked it up. And it shows these two kids, a girl who looks like she's an older teenager, maybe early 20s, and this young boy who looks like he's 8 or 10. And they are bound and gagged in like what looks like to be a picture inside the van.
Oh, crap.
It looks rough. And they tried to figure out who this guy was, and they couldn't find it. And some people who looked at this thought that it was this woman named Tara Calico, who disappeared at age 19. She was probably kidnapped, and there's really been no leads except for this one single Polaroid that flew out of a truck in 1989. And her family was on Oprah, and there's a whole bunch, there was a whole bunch of pleas for it. Wow. And for a long time, there was just no other developments. And then in preparing for this, in June 2023, the local sheriff's office announced a breakthrough in the disappearance. And they are basically, there is sufficient evidence to submit the investigation to the DA's office for a review of potential charges. And as of now, that is the kind of last update on the Wikipedia page for this. So we're not talking about her either today, but.
you got me.
Yeah. If you get a chance to, maybe we can leave a link in the description or something, but if you look up disappearance of Tara Calico, Calico, you'll see that Polaroid on her Facebook page. And it's a disturbing picture. Just the way it's framed, the way it looks. It looks like two kids to be in some kind of distress. We're not talking about her either. Instead, we're going to talk today about a guy named R. Bud Dwyer. And do either of you two know who Bud Dwyer is?
Nope.
No?
Yeah. So this is absolutely in the category of just like stories that I'm surprised just aren't more widely known. So Bud Dwyer was a politician in Pennsylvania in the 70s and 80s. He gets elected.
That's where I live.
As it turns out, good for you. He was a member of the Pennsylvania House of Representatives. He first got elected in 1969. Nice.
Hey.
He moves on. Yeah. He moves on to the Pennsylvania Senate a couple years after that and serves for a decade from 71 to 81. And then he becomes the treasurer of Pennsylvania in 1981. And before that, he taught social studies and coached football. So I already have a bit of love for this guy. He becomes the treasurer of Pennsylvania. Now, when he was treasurer of Pennsylvania, I won't bore you guys with some of the details, but it seemed like there was a little bit of a pay-to-play scheme where a contract was given out to a computer technology company. And in return, Dwyer was going to get a $300,000 kickback from the company.
Classic.
Right. And you know, classic kind of corruption or graft or pay-to-play, like, you know, it's all a matter of degrees when it comes to this stuff, but it seemed like this was something that that Dwyer did, and there was kind of various, depending on who you talk to. Dwyer said that, you know, that never happened. There was just like a general agreement of, hey, I'll help you win re-election next time.
Which is also, to be clear, not good.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's right, illegal, but, per se.
But. Right, but it is a, right, it would be a different thing. People at the company at one time said that he was totally innocent. That never happened. And another time was like, no, yeah, that totally happened. So it seems pretty clear something happened.
Yeah.
It is, you know, exactly what took place and what was said and maybe what was left unsaid is, you know, still a matter for some kind of debate. It is worth noting that many of the of Dwyer's former staff in the years since have basically come out and said, yeah, the evidence was, you know, we supported our man, but the evidence was kind of overwhelming that there was some corruption. And so he was, he wound up being convicted of mail fraud, racketeering, perjury, and conspiracy to commit bribery. And the whole way through, he had maintained his innocence. He said, I am, you know, I am innocent of everything that I have been charged with, just categorically up and down. He said he would not resign his job. He said that even if he were to go to prison, he would take basically an unpaid administrative leave while his appeal was pending to uphold and go through with his appeal, which, like, you know, if you're going to, you know, protest your innocence, good for you.
Yeah.
He wrote to President Reagan. Yeah, well, look at,
I mean,
let's imagine a scenario where he's innocent. Like, you know, okay.
If we're thinking about Donald Trump.
I feel like if someone was innocent, they would probably still have enough respect for the job to resign anyway.
You know, I would hope so. However, and we're going to get to this. Bud Dwyer does not resign from his job, very famously. And also does not go to prison. And this is where the story goes from being just a politician charged with corruption to something that gets talked about on a podcast many years later. He writes to the senator from Pennsylvania, I believe, was Arlen Specter at the time, as well as to, Arlen Specter, as well as to President Reagan, trying to get a presidential pardon from all this. And it was made clear to him that that's just, like, even if we wanted to, even if we weren't inclined to, we want to let the judicial process play out. It's also just, like, way too quick. Like, this will not happen before you wind up having to go to prison.
Also, I feel like, and as may come up soon-ish, potentially, in you know, modern times, not this story, a presidential mm-hmm. pardon doesn't do anything for state crimes. So.
Yes, I think it was federal crimes he was charged with. If I can take a look, I believe it was federal crimes, but I can kind of look at that as we're going through.
Yeah, sorry, not to, you know, keep derailing you a little here.
No, it's not. Like, I guess I assumed that it was federal crimes just the way he was talking about a pardon, yeah. But I guess I'm not 100% sure. And so what ends up, federal prosecutors. So it was a federal case. So on the day before he is to be sentenced, and basically, you know, like stripped of the title, and you know, things are going to get bad for him. He's going to go to prison. He calls a press conference. So I guess 2 days before then, he has his staff call a press conference and doesn't tell him what it's going to be about. And the staff just said, "Hey, press, show up. Treasurer of Pennsylvania, who just got convicted and is about to go to prison, wants a press conference. We don't really know what's going on. He might resign. He might, you know, innocence. He might, you know, say something crazy. Who knows?" So he does this, and he originally wanted his staff to keep out certain members of the press that were like mean to him and wrote mean profiles. And the staff was like, "We can't do that. Like, we're the, you know, we're part of the government. That's not how it works."
A simpler time.
Yeah. So he goes to, the next day, he goes to give this big public press conference. And it's this long, rambling thing. And he makes it very clear he's not going to resign. He makes it very clear that, you know, he maintains his innocence. He begins running from a 21-page prepared text.
Wow.
Well, aides had a 20-page version to the media. The final page was expected to be his announcement that he would resign from office. So again, 20 pages get handed out to the media, which is a thing that happens for press, just so that way the media has something to work off of as they are preparing his story. Mm-hmm. And it was a long, rambling press conference. I believe it went on for like 30-something minutes as this was happening. And there were some people that just decided to like up and leave because they were like, "This is just, like we'll find out if he resigned later." And then he basically gets to the last page and he stops reading from his prepared remarks. And he says, and I'm going to quote him in his Wikipedia article here. He says, "I've repeatedly said I'm not going to resign as state treasurer. After many hours of thought and meditation, I've made a decision that should not be an example to anyone because it is unique to my situation. Last May, I told you that after the trial, I would give you the story of the decade. To those of you who are shallow, the events of this morning will be that story. But to those of you with depth and concern, the real story will be what I hope and pray will be the results from this morning. In the coming months and years, the development of a true justice system here in the United States. I am going to die in this office." And he continues on and on. He then pulls out three envelopes and calls up different aides. One was addressed to the governor of Pennsylvania, the newly elected Bob Casey, who is the father of the current Senator Casey from Pennsylvania. The second one contained an organ donor card and some other materials. And the third one was addressed to his wife, Joanne, and there were some letters in there for his kids. So he handed all those. And then he pulls out a long manila envelope, and he pulls out a 357 Magnum revolver.
No.
Live at this press conference. You can see where this is going, in case it's not obvious yet.
Yeah.
How did they allow that? Who?
It was the 80s.
Yeah, right. It was the 80s. And also, like, I don't know if he's
of all the people. Yeah, of all the people to be at the thing, you don't expect the person holding the press conference to be the person with a gun.
True. Yeah, right. It's, you know, it was like the SpongeBob thing. Like, I was the last person I would have expected, but it turns out it was me all along.
Yeah.
So what happens is, while television cameras are recording this and broadcasting live, he has this gun out and people see what's going on and they're like, you know, "Don't, like, dear God, don't do it, man." And he's like, "No one come near me. This could hurt somebody." It's clear that somebody is going to try and stop him shortly. And without going into too much detail, he takes his own life there live on TV. And that footage is still available online, and it is not hard to find it.
Wow.
That's crazy.
And you can see the live suicide of somebody on TV. And it was speculated as to why it went down like this, why he didn't follow through with the appeal, why he didn't just resign, like, why go through with this? And while we will never know for 100% certain, it seems like one reason he did this was that if you die in office, then your family gets survivor's benefits like pension and things like that instead of having to resign. Mm. And so his wife and kids were able to get some sort of benefits because he was, you know, the the state treasurer right up until his death. Again, the day before he was supposed to be sentenced for his crimes. That footage wound up airing live on one station. Many stations throughout Pennsylvania broadcast tape footage of Dwyer's suicide to a midday audience.
What a wild time, man.
Yeah, it is truly nuts. And, again, this footage is, available to see online, and it's not like you have to go to super dark websites. Like, YouTube, if you just Google Bud Dwyer's suicide on YouTube, they've mostly censored, the raw footage. But if you just Google it, you'll be able to find it before too long. We won't be linking to any of that here.
Yeah.
In case anybody clicks it randomly, but if you're somebody that wants to see that, it is there for you. And it is one of the rare cases of an actual honest to God, you see someone living and then you see them dead, to be shown on TV, not in a Hollywood way, not where there's cuts, not where it's staged, but you see what happens when someone gets shot. And it is as graphic and horrifying and more so than you can imagine. There have been various, depictions of him throughout the years. There was a documentary that came out called Honest Man, The Life of Bud Dwyer, that was made in 2010, that has lots of interviews from his family that portrays him, as an honest man in a good light. There have been many songs that have been kind of written that feature him.
Huh.
Yeah, I think one of my favorite is the 1995 song by a band called Filter, which I'm not familiar with that band, but they wrote a song called "Hey Man, Nice Shot," which little on the nose, but cool song. If you get a chance to listen to it, this is apparently Marilyn. As I'm looking now, shocker, Marilyn Manson. Marilyn Manson debut single "Get Your Gun" samples audio from Dwyer's suicide.
God.
What a weird, strange man. So that is kind of the quick story of Bud Dwyer. And I remember first hearing about this, if you guys remember, a couple of years ago when the those television reporters were gunned down live on camera. There was a cameraman and a reporter that were shot while reporting. And just somebody brought this up, live deaths on TV, have happened before. And, what do we do now in the internet age of, posting that and making that content may be the wrong word, but making that, easily viewable.
Yeah.
Do you try and crack down on that? Do you say, hey, it's the internet, people are going to find it anyways? And the fact that that you guys hadn't heard of Bud Dwyer, and I imagine that most other people listening are unfamiliar with his story, probably says something about how, we've kind of decided that we're going to do what we can to, kind of censor ourselves as a society over these kinds of videos.
Yeah.
But that stuff is still out there. You can still go look it up if anybody's interested. It is as horrifying as you want, which is why we gave the content warning at the beginning, but it is there, and that's the story of Bud Dwyer.
Well, it also makes me sort of think, obviously incredibly different contexts, but of the hundreds of times that, the George Floyd situation was shown on every news channel. I remember while that was happening, watching CNN.
Mm-hmm.
And they would just at least, 4 or 5 times a day air the whole 9-10 minutes of it, full stop.
Right. Just how graphic it is when somebody's dying, make it oh no, this is too bloody to air, but this person dying, but you can't see any blood or guts, it's totally cool. That's a really interesting question. And I never made that connection until you just said
that.
And
I'm sure there were many strong editorial conversations happening at all those networks at the time.
Yeah.
Right. I understand the argument for it, in that it's this is obviously something horrible, and that this is how reflective of the country, mm-hmm, as a whole is up for debate. but at some point reflective of the country as a whole. And, you know, do you get to not see this while still being part of this country, you know?
Right. Right. And also, how do you have the conversations that might be necessary around whatever the, you know, whether it's George Floyd or something else, without also seeing the footage? Like,
yeah.
You know, that was one thing that got brought up a whole lot with around George Floyd was, had the footage not been seen, not much would have happened. Right. And that's not a new or novel idea. But yeah, this is just like one of the most graphic cases that I am aware of on live TV, and somebody kind of using the medium of TV as a way to, you know, get his message of, hey, I'm an innocent man out there. Whether it was true or not is a bit of a separate story.
Well,
yeah, I think no great way to segue out of this, but I think that's the end of the episode.
I also have no idea what the heck I'm going to call this episode as a title.
Just Mike Takes the Wheel, Volume Whatever.
Half,
sure.
Is that what we
do?
Teeth.
No, I do. It's Mike Takes the Wheel, Volume Whatever, colon, and then I have a title.
I mean, okay, well, it can be no good title for this one. Mike Takes the Wheel, Volume blah, blah, blah. No good title for this one.
That may just be it, folks.
There we go.
All right,
take us out, Gavin.
Yeah, on that note, we'll be back with something very different in 2 weeks' time.
Yes. Take care,
yeah,
everybody.
So, yeah, with that, I have been Gavin. That has been Mike and Fia, and we will see you all in 2 weeks. Until then, take care, everybody, especially after this. This episode of I Wish You Were Dead was written by Mike Bryson and hosted by Gavin Davidson, Mike Bryson, and Fenella Campanino. It was sound edited and edited for YouTube by Gavin Davidson. Special thanks to former guests of the pod and to listeners like you.